Good evening and welcome to Gnostic Waves, the radio show that brings you all topics of a mystical, philosophical and psychological nature. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Diana Azam, your host, and today I'm joined by our special guest, Paul Mofsession, Gnostic instructor with his wife Sharon from the Blue Mountains. So welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you, Diana. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no worries. So on today's show, the topic is on the probationary path, and it's actually a topic that one of our listeners requested. And so I invited Paul to talk about it and to shed some light through his many years of experience in these Gnostic studies. So, Paul, if you could take it from here.
Thank you. So to discuss the probationary path, which is really part of a bigger picture known as the initiatic path, what I thought might be good is first to define these terms, initiation and probation, just to help us get our bearings and orientation. So the first thing we can look at is, what is initiation? What is the initiatic path? So initiation, if we looked in the definition, it's a term that says to admit, or the action of admitting someone into a secret or obscure society or group. And typically it says this is done through some kind of ritual of initiation. The introduction of someone to a particular activity or to a particular skill, such as in the world of martial arts, and the action of beginning something. In other words, to initiate something, to begin something. So when we look at this idea of initiation, we find that it exists in all systems, all traditions. It's a rite of passage, basically. It marks an entrance or an acceptance into some kind of group or society. And this could be like a formal admission, like, for example, into a community, like, for example, in certain religious activities, as we'll see in a minute, or an admission into what would be classified in the society as adulthood, somewhere where people were going to be admitted to be seen now as a functional part of the society. So it could have a formal component or a more mystical component. And it also implies some kind of rebirth into a new role. So we see it, for example, in the Hindu tradition, they have something called the Diksha. In the Christian tradition, baptism or confirmation. In the Jewish tradition, it's known as the bar mitzvah or the bat mitzvah for females. And we also see it in all fraternal organizations, secret societies or religious orders, but even in university and school, in graduation. We see it in the military or the fire brigade or the police. Police officers, they have some kind of recruitment that occurs into their society. So we could say it's basically some kind of rite of passage that occurs and initiates a new birth into a new role. The reasons that initiation exists are, in some ways, it helps us recognize certain parts of our life, which can include death itself. So there's a value of understanding, because most initiations go through some kind of ritual death, the death of the old to the birth of the new. And initiation also has a deeper function. It reveals the meaning of existence, which is passed on from generation to generation, and therefore also has some kind of responsibility that comes with initiation in a culture or a secret society or a mystical school. And it also reveals or opens the world of what's called the transhuman, in the world, the transcendental, something beyond the physical world. So the initiation opens us up to the spiritual values. And this is what's very important for us, because outside of other processes for us in Gnosis, this is what we are really interested in. Now, probation, most people will know of it from something that is the legal use that came into activity around the 19th century, late 19th century, where someone may be an offender in jail and they're released from that detention, subject to a period of good behavior and under some kind of supervision. But traditionally, in the late Middle English period and Old French period, this idea of probation was something where people were under some kind of observation or testing of their character or their ability in some kind of new role, which would have been the initiated. And here they were monitored, they were observed to see how their behavior was progressing, and therefore determined what stages of initiation they would be able to enter. Now, Master Samuel tells us that probationism is the science that studies how the essence is imprisoned, how the soul is imprisoned. And this science is a science of esoteric tests that contain internal wisdom that allows us to free ourselves from the prison of the mind. It's a pure science that permits us to know the errors of the mind in depth. And the human mind then liberates itself from fears and cravings. It liberates itself from the desire of accumulation and attachment. It liberates itself from hatred, from egotism. It liberates itself from violence. The human mind has to liberate itself from the depressing process of reasoning. The depressing process of reasoning is this process where the mind is trapped between the struggle of the opposites, the antithesis, and is always polarizing itself. So it never sees the whole picture, and therefore it only sees one part of life. It's a divided mind, basically. And this mind is useless to the inner self. It's useless to the soul. So we exchange this depressing process of reasoning for the beauty of comprehension. And here the mind becomes free to know, to truly know. And also we can say that during this process of probationism, Master Samuel describes how desire and cravings are really obstacles for the mind. So one has to realize that these cravings produce karma, and they produce the constant seeking of security. And that security is something that enslaves us. It's a kind of false security, because we look for this security in the physical world, in materialism, and we forget our interior life, our interior reality. We forget the interior world. We forget the mystery of existence, and we become full of fear of loss, fear of death. And that's why the initiatic process exists, to free ourselves from that kind of imprisonment, a mental imprisonment, a psychological slavery, but inevitably it eventually traps the human being, not just the mind. So these are, I guess, some ideas we could put forward to start what we're going to describe. I think it's also worth noting that there are words that most people have come across or heard that need to be clarified, because in the process of initiation and the probationary path, there are also stages that don't all mean the same thing. For example, awakening, to awaken the consciousness. So this process has to occur for the probationary path to exist. The consciousness has to be somehow confronted with the realization that it's hypnotized and identified with life. So it has to liberate itself from these things that are keeping us enslaved through the senses and through the mind. Illumination is another word that's often talked about. Illumination is a process where the consciousness, having freed itself from the trapped state of hypnosis, starts to experience truth. It starts to receive light. And this illumination starts to give us wisdom. On the same token, there is the idea of psychic and psychicism. This idea of the psychic and psychic energies can occur without really going through the process of initiation. In other words, a psychic can use psychic energy, which is the energy of the astral body, and it can start to awaken faculties that exist within the human being, but these might be their downfall, because without the probationary path, one could use these for the egoical reasons rather than the purpose that they're intended, which are the senses of the being, the senses of the soul. So we have to be very careful about awakening these psychic faculties before the time is right. so the being knows when these psychic faculties can be used wisely. And then there's something called self-realization, and this idea is about the incarnation of the diverse parts of the being. So the tree of life, the Kabbalah, the mysteries of the Kabbalah, they enlighten us or illuminate us about these diverse parts of the being which have descended from the highest realms, the most refined realms, the highest vibration of creation into denser and denser levels till reaching the physical world. And when these diverse parts are realized and once again awakened and rescued from the world of illusion, the world of matter, then the possibility of liberation exists. And here the being itself is able to go into these most mysterious parts of creation in the universe by liberating itself from what traps it in creation. And this is all done through what we know in Gnosis as the three factors of the revolution of consciousness, the birth, death, and sacrifice for humanity, and also through the three obligatory steps. These obligatory steps are the steps that are awakening imagination, inspiration, and intuition. So these are the foundations we need in order to understand what we're about to discuss. In Gnosis, the initiatic path is described as a set of experiences that are lived intensely and wisely. But the path is mathematical. It's not anything random. In other words, one doesn't just live the path just by doing anything. It's mathematical. It's precise. It exists in two dimensions. It exists in a physical or external dimension where many aspects of life will be used for the initiatic journey, the tests and trials, the ordeals. And it exists internally, where the initiation of the soul occurs. So it's expressed in our life, and it's expressed internally. And the initiatic path goes through a precise series of steps that allow us to choose what we could say a direct path to liberation, or a spiral path to that journey. The direct path, which is the Gnostic path that we follow, is a very difficult path because it's shorter and the suffering is greater. In other words, the ordeals and tests and trials are greater, but the rewards are also greater. And this is what we have to keep in mind. So all traditions would describe that the initiate would follow generally three stages or three steps. As we said, the three obligatory steps. And these were often defined in different ways. In the ancient Egyptian mysteries and the occult masonry, they're described as the apprentice, the companion, and then finally the master. And then the master has stages and stages of mastery. Now, all this is happening not for our personality, not for our ego, not for our physical sense of self, but for the essence, for the soul, which is a fraction. The essence is a fraction of the human soul that incarnates, also called the Buddhata. And Master Sama says that contained in the Buddhata is this thing called the superlative consciousness of the being. It's this primordial material which fabricates the soul and allows the consciousness to undergo all these different stages of initiation. And this journey has often been called the great work, the magnus opus. This great work is the great work of the inner father, the being. And it's a period of work that begins stage by stage through what Master Samael has left us called the map of the three mountains. Now, the initiatic path is made up of these three mountains. And before we enter these three mountains, we have this probationary path or the minor mysteries, the minor initiations. And that's what we're going to describe in the second part of today's talk. So just to summarize them before we go into depth about them, we'll take a break before we do that. The minor initiations are described as nine initiations that are designed in a probationary order, for self-realization. And Master Samael describes that really these minor mysteries are something like a chain that we have to break in order to reach the major mysteries. And we can rapidly pass through these minor mysteries if we have the right foundation. But he says to want to move through them quickly, to fuse ourselves with our innermost and not pass through these nine minor mysteries, nine probationary stages, etc. He says it's like wanting to receive a doctor's degree in medicine without having studied all the years in university, or wanting to be a general without passing through all the military ranks. In other words, it's necessary, it's important that before we go to the major mysteries of the great work, one is submitted to and proved in this probationary path. And this is the path that leads to the first mountain. Now, this probationary path is made up of these steps, something called the guardian of the threshold, the hall of fire, the four tests of the elements, and then the nine minor mysteries. And this constitutes the probationary path. So what I thought we could do is we could stop here, and then we could have a music break, and then we could come back and describe this probationary path and these steps in greater detail.
Fantastic introduction, Paul. You've recommended a music piece from Mozart's Magic Flute.
Yes, an initiatic opera in actuality.
Yes, okay, very interesting. Okay, so we will, I will play the overture to this opera, and then we'll be back to hear more on the probationary path with Paul on Gnostic Waves. Okay, and we're back on Gnostic Waves. You were just listening to the overture of Mozart's Magic Flute. So we have Paul here on the show today. He gave an introduction on the topic of the probationary path, and now he's going to continue going deeper into more of the intricacies of what this path actually requires of us. So thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Diana. So I'm going to describe some of the initial aspects of the probationary path, and then we're going to get into that actual minor mysteries, which are, it's important to understand that these stages that exist before the nine minor mysteries are important, but the nine minor mysteries themselves become the probationary path. So one of the prerequisites to enter into the minor mysteries is a concept in Gnosis called chastity. And chastity is very important because the whole journey of the initiation is really a journey of how the Divine Mother within us as the Kundalini is processed and altered and changed and purified. This requires us to understand that the energy itself must be contained within the human being and modified through transmutation, sublimation, and love. And this journey of the Divine Mother requires chastity, which is very different to celibacy, because it's where a couple can work together with this energy, or a single person can work with this energy, sublimating it. And this produces what we call the biological insurrection of the body. So everything starts there. And if a person cannot begin there, then their life will go from existence to existence until one is ready to understand and accept chastity. So that's the first step. Once that exists, the second step is the guardian of the threshold. The guardian of the threshold is really a part of our own being which acts like a mirror, and it looks at us and shows us our psychological state. Now, when we see this for the first time, it's very scary, because what we discover or see is the monstrosity of the ego, how we have deformed the beauty and light of the being and the essence and the soul. It's something akin to a book that was made into a movie called The Picture of Dorian Gray. And in this process of discovering the Garden of the Threshold, which occurs in the internal worlds, we often will be confronted face to face with something that's so scary that we will often want to run away. And the test of the Garden of the Threshold is where one can confront this and defeat it. And there are three guardians: the astral guardian, the mental guardian, and the causal guardian, the causal plane. We meet the latter two in the first mountain. So in the probationary path, we meet only the first one, the guardian of the threshold of the astral world. And why is this important? Because the astral world is a molecular world, a world of a higher frequency, a higher vibration, a world where the astral light is allowing a kind of medium, a place where all of this plays out. So we have to become also, we have to learn how to become awake in the astral so we can recall and recollect these experiences that will happen there. But we shouldn't worry too much about that, because the being also knows when it's important for us to realize and recognize that this is happening. And sometimes we are going through these tests and trials without even being conscious of them. But we've lived them, and we've lived them because of the state of the consciousness. So this first ordeal we call the Guardian of the Threshold is, as we said, a place where we will have to confront and defeat and be willing to face ourselves. Because if someone's not willing to really see what their true state is, they're not going to be willing to see the true state of the world. They're not going to be willing to break that hypnosis of Maya and illusion. Now, once we defeat the Guardian of the Threshold, we pass through something called the Hall of Fire. The Hall of Fire is a hall that starts to purify our internal bodies, our internal vehicles, which are the bodies of the soul, the wedding garment of the soul. And this is what allows one to then go forward and begin the four tests of the elements. Today we're going to do a practice with the four tests of the elements, so I'm going to briefly just run through them. In ancient Egypt, these tests were done physically, and people died in these tests when they were actually submitted to them. Master Samael narrates this very beautifully in one of his memories of his reincarnations during the time of the Egyptian pharaohs. The trial of fire is a test which tries to prove our serenity and sweetness. And so any lack of serenity and sweetness is tested through people accusing us, persecuting us, insulting us, often wrongly, because it's not a test if they're accusing us of something we really did. So what we discover is that we'll be accused, we'll be slandered, insulted, wronged in some way or another. And if we react violently, if we react with anger, wrathfulness, etc., we fail this test. And if we succeed, then we are welcomed into a beautiful hall where a celebration occurs, the music of the spheres play, and there is a great celebration that we've accomplished this and come out victorious. And then the trial of air is a test where we have to be tested against losing something or someone that we hold on to. You know, we feel fear despair in this test. This test is a test that one has to be willing to lose what they love most. Now, we shouldn't be afraid of this, because as soon as people hear this, the first thing they think of is that, oh, something physically is going to happen to them where someone close will die or something like that. Well, that's inevitable anyway. That's going to happen. But that would never happen as a test. No, nothing like that would happen to us purposely taking someone's life away from our life. So we shouldn't fear about those things. I mention that because that has been raised many times when people hear about this. But what really happens in the internal world is we're thrown from a precipice. And as we're falling, if we're afraid to die, we're holding on to our own physical life, then we fail the test, because we fall screaming, afraid. If we fall graciously, willing to even give our own life, then this is a test where we succeed. But in the physical world, we are often, as I said, going to be tested losing something we love most. It might be a position that we hold. It might be something. We don't know what. The test is very individual. And this brings us to the fact that the path is particular. There's general tests, but they will be very particular to each person and their own circumstances. There's a beautiful story in the book Autobiography of a Yogi, where Babaji, an immortal master, is on a high mountain, and climbing up the mountain is this initiate who's been looking for him for so long. And he comes up and he finds Babaji, and he prostrates before Babaji and tells him how he wants to become his disciple and how hard and how long he's been looking for him. And Babaji says to him, if you want to be my disciple, go and throw yourself off the cliff. And the guy turns around, walks and jumps off the cliff. And then the disciples of Babaji are amazed. Why, Master? Why would you send such a devotee who's sincere to his death? And he says, go down and get him. So they climb down the mountain and bring up his body, which is now battered and bruised and dead from the fall. Babaji resurrects him. And Babaji tells him, if you had hesitated for only a moment, I would not have accepted you as my disciple. But since you did do what I say, then you are welcome. So that's a kind of example of the test of air that happened physically to this person with this master. The trial of water, great trial, where the candidate is thrown into the ocean. They think they're drowning and they can't adapt to the various conditions of life. So those who are feeling like they're just shipwrecked on the ocean of life and they would prefer to die rather than struggle, they fail the test of water. Those that are willing to fight and fight and fight, they will conquer this test. This test, which is a test of adaptability, like water, it adapts to everything. The test of earth is the test where one has to learn how to take advantage of the worst adversities of life. They are actually the best opportunities. We have to learn to smile before adversity. And if we succumb before pain and adversity, we fail this test. Internally, we see two mountains, two enormous mountains menacingly closing upon us. And if we scream afraid again that we're going to be buried alive, we fail this test. So it's interesting because in the internal worlds, these tests we will experience these tests through some experience that couldn't happen physically because physically we would physically die. But in the internal worlds, they feel so real that we think we are actually living them. And that's the whole thing. The tests appear like they're actually really happening. And in the physical world, it'll be more in those psychological and practical experiences of those tests where we will be submitted to things. And then our response will be evaluated, always being evaluated, being watched by the masters. And then these tests of the elements are very important because we don't do them once and finish. These tests come again and again and again and again, and we have many opportunities to overcome them. And as we become more conscious, we also are given the tests in greater degrees of refinement and subtlety. So it's important to understand that in the minor mysteries, we can fail the tests many times, and it's understood that we're going to fail them. It's not expected that we're going to somehow magically conquer these tests the first time they're given to us. So we shouldn't feel bad about failing the test if we wake up and realize, or at the end of the day, we are evaluating our day and realize, oh, you know, I submitted to that person. They accused me of something that I didn't do, and I reacted immediately with anger. That was the test of fire. I failed it. We shouldn't beat ourselves up like that. We should learn from these things and continue to move forward. So what happens is that after we conquer all of these, then we are able to be admitted into the probationary path of the nine minor mysteries. Now, these nine minor mysteries are really amazing. Here, the person or the aspirant, also often called the neophyte, because the neophyte is representing something new. They are new to the path. The neophyte, this word, neophyte is quite a beautiful word. It's really describing someone who's newly converted to something, and that's like a novice, a beginner. So we become a neophyte in this path because we conquer these initial tests and ordeals, and now we are going to be welcomed to the probationary path specifically, and here we are going to be watched. And these nine minor mysteries are not described anywhere because they are unique. There is some characteristics about them that we know, but there is not, let's say, a specific set of tests that we can say, okay, like a checkbox, I'm going to finish this one, this one, this one, this one, and then I've done my nine minor mysteries. These nine minor mysteries are unique because they're a set of ordeals that the neophyte has to undergo to prove that they are ready for the major mysteries. So they're like a requirement because each initiation has its degree and each degree has its own test. The candidate will be tested in the nine minor mysteries, for example, with patience. Patience is very important, and there are degrees and degrees and levels of patience. Anyone can believe they're patient when no one is testing their patience. It's different when we are subjected to a tremendous difficulty and we lose all the conditions around us that would allow us to be patient. And then asked to be patient. So patience comes in small degrees. I mean, you could start by observing how we cope when we go to the bank and have to wait in a long queue and we're in a hurry, or how we respond in traffic, or how we react when we lose the time of missing the train or the bus or something like that, or even missing a flight and have to be patient, waiting, or maybe the flight is cancelled and then we have to sleep in the airport overnight. And then all of these things will be testing our patience. Patience with other people, patience not only with the people we love, but patience with the people we don't really like. You know, and it's true, we have to say that in the beginning, the ego is alive and we have dislike to people. We have people that are agreeable for us and people who are disagreeable. But the disagreeable people are actually our better friends, because they're the ones that are going to bring out in us all those things that are deep, deep and hidden from the conscious mind and from the public exhibition of who we are. So patience is a big one. We could talk a lot about patience. Master Samuel says it's one of the most important principles to advance in the path, and anyone without patience will fail. We have to have patience in meditation. We have to have patience in our astral travel, trying to astral travel. How many times do we abandon our exercises simply because we didn't get an immediate response? So patience is a big part of the path, because later in the death of the ego, in the incarnation of the intimate Christ, in the labors of Hercules, all these greater mysteries that will be waiting for us in the three mountains, we will fail miserably without patience. It takes time and it takes perseverance. It takes serenity. Chastity is another one. Chastity we've described a moment ago, the capacity of learning how to honor that sacred energy that has been deposited within us in our sacred seed. Fidelity is another minor mystery. You know, fidelity is one of those things where today in life we find less and less fidelity amongst human beings. It's really something where there's loyalty. Fidelity is something about loyalty. We have to have loyalty to the being, loyalty to the path, loyalty to the masters, loyalty to the truth. You know, we are going to be tested what we really have greater loyalty for, what we have faith in. You know, fidelity is also part of faith experience. We can see that fidelity in a marriage is very important, that a couple can trust each other, that they'll know they'll be there, as they say, have each other's back, that they'll be there for each other, that they will be honorable to each other in their oath as far as not never committing adultery. Fidelity and loyalty in a marriage is, once lost, it's all very hard to recuperate. Fidelity in friendship, the same, that the friend knows that we're there for them. But it's demonstrated. Fidelity has to be demonstrated. Fidelity is not just a concept. The difference between faith and loyalty as a concept is what they mean is in fidelity they are practiced. We are really there. And it's what breeds the idea of freedom. You know, fidelity is really remarkable, because it's the fidelity is a quality of faith and faithfulness. It's a quality of loyalty. In its original meaning, it was regarded as a duty. And we have, for example, in fidelity, the duty of the being that we have to follow, the duty of managing our five cylinders of the human machine. That's a duty that we have. It's a specific duty that we must fulfill. We must put order into our intellect, our emotion, our instinctive, our motor and sexual centers, and put them at the service of the being. Also in this ordeal is the test of silence, knowing how to be silent, how to keep silent, how to be able to know when to talk and when to not to talk. For example, the capacity of not revealing the mysteries that are being given to us to those who are profane, which means those who are outside of the temple, and those who have not been initiated yet. So one has to learn not to brag or not to get like a mythomanic experience or a megalomaniac experience. So silence is very important, because we have to know when to talk and when not to talk, and we have to learn how to listen. Persistence, discipline, all of these are part of the nine minor mysteries. The discipline of our practices, for example, the persistence in our practices, the regularity of our practices. The regularity, for example, if one is in a Gnostic school, of attending the classes and being present and being there when needed for things. The capacity of persisting, if we attend something, for example, I've seen people who come to a meditation retreat and then leave halfway through the retreat because of something. That's a lack of persistence, lack of discipline, to put something higher than what would be there for the being. So the neophyte must demonstrate the willingness and the skill and the ability to walk the path. All these tests will be subjected to, and they'll be subjecting all the egos to their own particularities. So lust, envy, greed, gluttony, all these things will be tested. That's part of the nine minor mysteries. And then there is this very little known test called the ordeal of the threshold of the sanctuary, where we will come into contact with the Divine Mother, and we will have to decide whether we accept her and accept her book of wisdom. And it's there where she will start to awaken Idam Pingala, where the nadis of the inner hidden anatomy of the human being will start to be cleansed and purified. And those are what need to be awoken long before the Kundalini awakens in the Sushumna canal. So here the Divine Mother recognizes the efforts we are making. And what is going on through all of this? What's going on is something called the purification. In each initiation, something has to die for something to be born. One has to lose everything in order to gain everything. So the more we hold on, the less we advance. The more we're willing to let go of the illusion, the desires, and all those things that bind us, the greater the capacity for us to advance in this work. And we discover in the end, particularly through this ordeal of the threshold of the sanctuary, that it is our Divine Mother which will guide us and comfort us, protect us, and illuminate us through this whole journey. So I want to finish here about the probationary path. Obviously, there are many other things that we could talk about, but I think as an introduction, this will serve us.
Okay, so we'll go to another short music break, another piece of Mozart's Magic Flute. So we'll be back in a few minutes for the meditation part of the show. Okay, we're back on the Gnostic Waves, just about to enter the meditation part of the show. So Paul's going to be leading us through a practice that's related to the topic of the probationary path. So thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Anna. So we're going to do a practice that relates to the four tests of the elements. I think it's the most practical thing we can do. So we are going to do a slight reflection about each of the tests which are associated with the element. And we're going to vocalize a mantra which is connected to that tattva or element as well. Now, we'll begin. So make yourself comfortable. Closing the eyes to remove the distractions from the external world. If we are seated in a chair, we should have our feet firmly planted on the ground. If it's possible to sit a little bit forward of the chair so that our spine can be erect and nothing pressing on the pathways. But if we cannot, we should just try to sit as comfortably as we can. Resting our hands on our lap, or we can place the back of the right hand in the palm of the left hand in our lap, or we can rest the hands face down on the thighs. try to adjust yourself so that you don't need to continuously move or correct your posture. In other words, try to find the most comfortable position so that we can remain still for the next 12 minutes or so. Bring your attention inwards. Realize how much of the day we have just been directing all our attention outwards to the world and to the preoccupations of our personality, the needs of the body. And now let's just dedicate this time to our inner divinity. Turning inwards, we become aware of our inner nature, our inner divine nature, our consciousness. That we exist outside of that persona that we use in life. To help us in this, let's become aware of our breath. Try to let the breathing come naturally. Let it fill up all the lungs, all the thoracic cavity from the top to the bottom. Let the breathing become rhythmical. If possible, breathing in and out through the nose, but don't strain yourself. If you need to use the mouth, that's okay. And allow the breath to flow in and out as we go inwards. We let the breath relax the body by letting the oxygen go to all the muscles. And as we exhale, we allow all the tension of the body to be released. Let the mind relax. Let go of any preoccupations. With each exhalation, let the mind relax. Let the emotions relax. Release any negativity, resentment, hurt and pain. Just let each breath bring in the tremendous force of the prana that is contained in the air. Allow the heart to feel its natural compassion and the mind to experience this natural tranquility. Now let's use this tranquility and serenity, using the consciousness. Let's investigate first the trial of air, the most subtle tattva, the most subtle element. Like air, this test is about losing something that is really invisible, that we have made concrete, that we have become attached to. What we despair or fear about are things that are concepts. We may fear poverty. We may fear to lose a relationship or to lose a job. It's really about attachment. Take a moment to discover in your life the kind of things that we feel attached to, that we are tied to emotionally and psychologically, and that we feel a difficulty to let go. They don't have to be physical things, they could be relationships in the sense of concepts within the relationships, ideals, values, the way people think of us. Now, to help reinforce this tattva within us, this element within us, known as vayu or air, so we can put order into our subtle anatomy and help us deal with the ordeal of air, we are going to mantralize the sacred sound Y-A-M, yum, three times. Concentrating on the area of the third eye, and the space between the third eye and the heart. Yum. Yum. Now let's move to the ordeal of fire. This test, which is to prove our serenity and sweetness. Let's do an evaluation, a type of inventory. How are we doing with our serenity and sweetness? Are we patient? Do we react very quickly if we feel offended, upset or wronged? Does anger play a big part of our life? Are we always frustrated and irritated or irritable? Or do we feel that we are managing the difficulties and obstacles of life with sweetness and serenity? Now let's use the mantra of the internal tattva known as tejas or agni, fire, to help put order into our atomic structure, to help remove this irascibility and make way for the serenity. The mantra is Ram, R-A-M, three times. concentrating now on the space between the heart and the anus. Now let's move to the trial of water as the tattva moves from being very fine and invisible as air, becoming visible as fire or light, and now becoming tangible to the senses like water, but still not dense. This test of water is a test that wants to discover our adaptability. Can we adapt to life? Or do we suffer terribly when things are not exactly the way we want them to be? Do we feel uncomfortable in different circumstances, social conditions, etc.? Do we feel the strength to continue to struggle with the difficulties of life, or do we want to just abandon life like those that are shipwrecked on the ocean of life? They reject the struggle. We have the tenacity for the path. If we do not have it for life, we will not have it for the path. Because our life is where the path will be lived. Now let's mantralize the sacred mantra of the internal tattva of water, apas, to reinvigorate the atoms of this tattva, to strengthen our capacity for the struggle. The mantra is VAM, V-A-M. VAM. VAM. Lastly, let's move to the trial of earth, where one has to learn to take advantage of the worst adversities. Can we accept that the most difficult situations in our life will be the most beneficial opportunities to learn about ourselves? Can we smile before adversity? Or do we want and expect that the path and life will just be a bed of roses, always comfortable and easy? Here, let's now mantralize the sacred mantra of earth. As water now has become solid, dense, and material. The sacred Prithvi, the tattva of earth, has as its mantra LAM, L-A-M. LAM. LAM. The practice here has ended, but I urge you to repeat this practice in your own time, taking more time, more space to reflect about each of the trials and mantralizing the sacred sounds longer. Thank you, everyone.
And thank you very much, Paul, for your time and insight onto this topic of the probationary path.
Thank you, Diana. You're welcome.
Okay, so that's all we have time for. If you want more information on the show or past show recordings, head to our website, it's gnosticwaves.com. That's GNOSTICWAVES.com. Thank you for your company and hope you can join us next week.